Searchlights pierce a starry night sky, sweeping the clouds and illuminating a giant edifice in the form of the words 20th Century Fox. 20th Century Fox, a News Corporation company. A woman's slender hand reaches for three golden pots of paint, one blue, one green, one red. She dips a fingertip in each color, then places the tips of her fingers on a glass surface. She pulls her hand across the glass, trailing three parallel lines. The glass rotates, and the letters UTV appear in a bold metallic case. UTV, motion pictures. The calm rippling surface of a body of water is reflected in the convex surface of a lens. The lens is revealed at the end of a brass telescope, sunlight glinting off its surface as a man stands at the water's edge, peering through the telescope. Spyglass entertainment. Over clouds scudding across a blue sky, 20th Century Fox presents. In association with UTV Motion Pictures and Spyglass Entertainment. The sky begins to darken and the clouds begin to gather. A Blinding Edge Pictures production. Mark Wahlberg, The Happening. Zoe Deschanel, John Leguizamo, Betty Buckley. Frank Collison, Ashlyn Sanchez. Spencer Breslin, Robert Bailey Jr. The clouds darken as they billow. Casting by Douglas Abel, Stephanie Holbrook, CSA. Costume designer, Betsy Hyman. Music by James Newton Howard. Co-producers, Jose L. Rodriguez, Devon Cota. Edited by Conrad Buff, ACE. Production designer, Janine Operwall. Director of Photography, Tak Fujimoto, ASC. The sky is now black and overcast. Executive producers, Roger Birnbaum, Gary Barber. Produced by Sam Mercer, Barry Mendel. Written, produced and directed by M. Night Shyamalan. A young man walks his dog along a wide tree-lined path. Joggers, suited men and kids with school bags crowd the pedestrian walkway. Caption: Central Park, New York City, 8:33 a.m. Skyscrapers rise above the trees as two young blonde women read on a park bench.
I forgot where I am.
You're at the place where the killers meet to decide what to do with the crippled girl.
That's right. That's right.
They return to their books. The woman with her hair down looks up.
Did you hear that?
She gazes warily across the park.
That's funny. That's weird. Those people look like they're clawing at themselves. Is that blood?
She watches people begin to walk backwards. She snaps her head round to see all of the passers-by standing frozen on the path. One man begins to walk backwards. Wide-eyed, she watches a dog bring a ball back to its petrified owner. She turns to her friend.
Claire, are you seeing this? Claire? Claire? Claire?
What page was I on?
Her friend's eyes rove erratically as she stares into space.
Page.
Claire's eyes glaze as she reaches her left hand up and draws out the sharp pointed needle securing her hair knotted behind her head. With a clenched fist, she brings the point down towards her neck and drives it into her jugular. Cop cars race through an intersection. A building site three blocks from Central Park, 8:59 a.m. Construction workers in hard hats gathered below scaffolding.
So then the little guy says, you have a girlfriend named Wendy too? Well, I saw your thing and it said WY. The big guy says, no, man, mine says, welcome to Jamaica, have a nice day.
Their faces fall as they turn to see the fallen body.
Christ, Mackenzie fell.
The workers follow the tubby foreman as he rushes to the fallen man, whose limbs are splayed, bent the wrong way. The foreman crouches and radios.
Medic, we have a major accident at the south side of the building. We'll need an ambulance. Jesus. Give him some room.
The foreman quakes as he turns to see another fallen body.
David?
Another body falls as the foreman walks towards Davis. A third body falls and hits a skip. Another body hits the street. The foreman gazes up, horrified, as more construction workers walk off the top of the building and tumble down towards him.
God in heaven.
In a classroom.
Look, I don't know if you guys have heard about this article in the New York Times about honeybees vanishing. Well, apparently, honeybees are disappearing all over the country. Tens of millions of them just disappearing. There's no bodies, no sign of them, they're just mysteriously gone. It's scary, huh? All right, let's hear some theories about why this might be happening.
Philadelphia High School.
Nothing? Come on, guys.
9:45 a.m.
Laura.
Disease?
Right. Could be a virus or infection. That's all over the country. It's a coordinated event in 24 states. It's a little tricky.
Pollution?
Could be. I mean, we're just pumping so much junk into the environment, they're just keeling over. But there are no bodies. Keep guessing. Dylan.
Global warming.
Temperature goes up a fraction of a degree, makes them disoriented. Maybe.
Handsome teacher Elliot Moore strolls amid his pupils.
Jake?
A dark-haired lad.
You don't have an opinion?
Jake shrugs.
You're not interested in what happened to the bees?
Jake shakes his head.
Should be more interested in science, Jake. You know why? Because your face is perfect. The problem is, your face is perfect at 15. Now, if you were interested in science, you would know facts like the human nose and ears grow a fraction of an inch each year. So a perfect balance of features now might not look so perfect 5 years from now. It might look downright whack 10 years from now.
Jake feels his nose.
Come on, buddy. Take an interest in science. What could be a reason the bees have vanished?
Jake shakes his head as he ponders. Elliot waits with his hand on his hip.
An act of nature and will never fully understand it.
Nice answer, Jake. He's right. I mean, science will come up with some reason to put in the books. But in the end, it'll be just a theory. I mean, we will fail to acknowledge that there are forces at work beyond our understanding. To be a good scientist, you must have a respectful awe for the laws of nature. Jake?
How much does the human nose grow each year?
It's minuscule, buddy, okay? Don't worry about it. You're gonna be a heartthrob your whole life. I was just messing with you.
Jake smirks and points at Elliot. A stout, gray-haired woman opens the classroom door.
The Dark Lord. Don't look into her eyes.
Elliot ducks across the class and turns out the lights. She turns them on.
Vice Principal, what can we do for you?
I'm afraid I have to interrupt you for a moment, Mr. Moore.
Okay, guys, calm down. I'll be right back.
What is it?
Elliot follows the vice principal down the hall past classes of bewildered students.
Excuse all the teachers? The administration makes us teach with a foot of snow on the ground. What is this?
The teachers are gathered in a lecture hall. The principal addresses them.
All right. There appears to be an event happening. Central Park was just hit by what seems to be a terrorist attack. They're not clear on the scale yet. It's some kind of airborne chemical toxin that's been released in and around the park. They said to watch for warning signs. The first stage is confused speech. The second stage is physical disorientation, loss of direction. The third stage is fatal.
Central Park? That's kind of odd.
I spoke with the head of schools. He said we should dismiss the students. So, Take your planners home so we can get back when this is over. All right? Let's do our jobs.
You guys still gotta work on your science projects for next week. What are the rules of scientific investigation? Identify variables, design an experiment, careful observation and measurement, interpretation of experimental data.
Hey, guys.
Elliot glances at his teenage students as they leave. Chalked on the board, attributed to Einstein, if the bee disappeared off the surface of the globe, then man would have only 4 years of life left.
Galactic, please. My mother just called my cell again. She's hysterical. Hysterical. I told her the probability of something happening in Philadelphia is very low. I mean, nobody's telling us to leave the city, right? So I threw some figures at her. It's good to be a math teacher sometimes. You know, people are comforted by percentages. Didn't work. She still wants us to get out the city and come out to her house. But she said for you now, I'm gonna come.
Yeah, let me think about that, okay? Did you hear about New York?
Elliot on his mobile.
You okay? Well, I mean, are you okay? Yeah, me too. Listen, I want to talk about it more. Julian's mom offered for all of us to get out of the city and stay with her. What do you think?
Elliot leaves school with Julian.
I'll bring Jess and Yvette and I'll meet you at the station.
Listen, Julian, Thelma's acting weird. Just be cool, okay?
What's going on?
She's acting odd. Just don't worry about it, okay?
Odd.
Look, if she's acting like she's distant or something.
What?
I can't say anymore.
Is she leaving you?
I didn't say that. It's just talk, okay? Just relax, please.
Elliot turns away from bespectacled Julian.
Hey, I'm gonna tell you something. You should never tell your best friend.
Why is everybody saying that?
I saw her on your wedding day.
Again with the wedding? What?
I walked into a waiting room by mistake and she was crying. She looked up. I saw her face. She wasn't ready to jump in, Elliot. That's not who she is. She's never going to jump in when you need her, man.
A fresh-faced brunette watches TV.
So do federal, state, and local officials have a plan in place for this type of catastrophe? Are they utilizing all the manpower, the money?
She reaches into her handbag and pulls out her mobile phone. The screen reads, incoming call, Joey. Alma glares at the phone as it continues to vibrate once she's tossed it onto the coffee table. Alma starts as Elliot comes through the front door into the stylish lounge.
Are you packed?
Yes.
What are they saying?
They're evacuating New York City.
She turns on the TV.
Well, our brains come equipped with a self-preservation mechanism to stop us from harmful actions. This is controlled by a combination of electrochemical signals in the brain. The blocking of neurotransmitters by certain toxins has been proven to cause hallucinations, asphyxiation, and paralysis. This new neurotoxin is basically flipping the preservation switch, blocking neurotransmitters in a specific order, causing specific, self-damaging, and catastrophic effects. Just how the toxin works and who the terrorist...
It makes you kill yourself. Just when you thought there couldn't be any more evil that could be invented.
I'll be packed in 2 minutes.
Alma shakes her head as she gawps at the news footage. Upstairs, in their tastefully decorated bedroom, Elliot hurriedly grabs clothes from a closet and stuffs them into a brown leather bag. He glances at a wedding photo on the bedside table, him smiling with Alma. He grabs a toy mood ring beside the photo and puts it on. He hurries out. The front page of the Philadelphia Inquirer on the bedside table headlines, "Murder Rates Soaring." Downstairs by the front door, Alma hurriedly snatches her phone from her bag.
Hello.
The screen reads Joey. She switches it off and slams the phone back in her bag, adopting a casual pose. Police with sniffer dogs at a train station.
No need to rush.
Elliot wanders through the crowd, glancing around. Julian waves to him.
Elliot! Elliot! Elliot!
Elliot joins Julian and a young girl in a crowd watching TV.
This just into the Eyewitness newsroom, and it's the latest developments. Autopsies on the first victims confirm the toxin is a natural compound. The attacks remain confined to the New York metropolitan area. This is a very, very disturbing story.
Now morning for Harrisburg.
Hey, Jess. Where's Yvette?
She was at a shop across town. She got stuck in traffic. She's gonna take the next train.
Well, wait.
No. She wanted us to get on this train with Jess. She'd feel a lot safer. Where's Alma?
Restroom.
Alma appears nearby.
Hey, Julian.
Julian smiles, holding up tickets.
I bought them. It was like getting one of those Cabbage Patch dolls when they first came out. The Madhouse. How are you?
Good. You?
Good.
Okay, good. Why don't
I'm really glad you chose to come.
Elliot closes his eyes as Alma looks crestfallen.
Nice. Elliot, can I talk to you for a second?
Yeah.
Elliot drops his bag as Alma takes him aside.
You told him about the fight?
No.
Why did he say that?
He guessed.
I love you, Elliot, but I don't like to put my feelings out there for everyone to see. I'm not that type of person. Elliot, these are our problems. I am upset. I'm gonna sit alone and cool off. By the time we get there, I'll be fine. Is that okay?
Fine.
Julian looks sheepish as Alma and Elliot trudge back over to join him.
I'm gonna get on the train. We're not gonna get to sit together anyways.
Okay.
Julian hands Alma her ticket. Alma to the little girl.
Hey, babe.
Hey, it's Alma.
How you doing?
Hanging in there.
Me too.
Alma glances at Elliot and heads for the train. Elliot glares at Julian.
What's wrong with you?
What?
You're wrong about her. She just needs time to figure it out.
Come on, don't get all sensitive.
Just give her a chance.
Okay, fine. If you don't want my help...
I don't want your help.
Okay.
Duh.
I heard it.
Jess, could you ask your dad for my ticket, please? Thank you. I'll see you on the train, Jess.
Elliot takes his ticket from Julian and storms off towards the platform.
Here we go.
Can we meet Mommy to sit Grandma's?
Mom's gonna get in the next train. You know how she's always late.
Julian picks Jess up and heads after Elliot. Downtown skyscrapers loom as the train rumbles out of the city. Rittenhouse Park, Philadelphia, 11:31 a.m. A woman takes keys from her bag as she walks a small white dog, while another middle-aged woman drags along a child. A breeze wafts the branches of the surrounding trees. In a traffic jam on a parkside road, a cop talks to a cab driver through his open window.
Chilly, isn't it today, Sal?
Maybe a little.
Pedestrians come to a standstill. The dog barks up at its entranced owner. The dog runs off past the cop. Blood squirts from the cop's forehead as he slumps to the ground, his semi-automatic pistol skidding across the tarmac between the stationary cars. The cab driver gets out, steps over the cop, and heads towards the gun. Wearing open-toed sandals, the cabbie stoops and picks up the gun. He walks forward between the cars. The scruffy, bearded cabbie slumps to the tarmac with a gunshot wound to his forehead. A woman in high heels steps from the pavement to pick up the gun. Alma's on her mobile in the packed railway carriage.
Hey, it's me. I'm on a train. I just want to say something, okay? You've got to stop calling me. You're acting like the Fatal Attraction guy here. I feel like I'm going to take a shower and see your silhouette on the shower curtain. We ate tiramisu together. That is it. I told you that would be it. You have got to chill out.
She frowns as she listens.
What? When? In Philadelphia?
Well, I don't know. What
Elliot's in the next carriage.
What's the news?
Apparently Philadelphia was just attacked.
Elliot glances at Julian.
Oh my God, it's there.
Call Mommy, call Mommy.
Jess watches anxiously on Julian's lap as he dials his mobile.
Honey, yeah, where are you? What? I can't hear you. I said I can't hear you. Text me. Text me. I can't hear you.
They think it started in Rittenhouse Square Park.
Another park?
Julian reads a text on his mobile screen.
Hey, she got on a bus going to New Jersey.
I want to talk to her.
I know, baby. I know she got out. She's headed to the town of Princeton.
I want to talk to her.
Julian kisses Jess's forehead. Elliot, standing next to them in the aisle, glances around the carriage anxiously. He hurries down the train, pushing past passengers chattering across the aisle, to Alma, and crouches beside her seat.
You okay?
They say Boston got hit too.
Where'd you hear that?
A friend from work. What about Yvette?
Oh God, she made it out on the bus.
What the hell is going on, Elliot?
Elliot looks down the train with a frown.
I honestly don't know.
He looks forlornly at a woman clutching a boy to her breast in the packed carriage. Elliot gazes at the mood ring as the train trundles along an embankment through verdant countryside. He, Alma, and the other passengers look out of the windows as the train slows and jolts to a halt in a clapboard rural station. A sign reads, Filbert.
Now what?
The passengers are gathered outside the train. Elliot approaches a huddled group of staff.
Sir?
Train service has been discontinued. This will be the last stop for all passengers.
Well, hey, what do you mean? Where are we?
Filbert, Pennsylvania.
Filbert? Does anybody know where that is? But why are you giving me one useless piece of information at a time? What's going on? Hey, why would you just stop? You can't just leave us here.
Sir, we lost contact.
With whom?
The train driver glances aside evasively.
Everyone.
Jess whispers in Julian's ear.
Don't be silly, we're safe here.
He turns to Alma beside them.
Sorry, she whispers to us when she gets scared.
We're so much the same, Jess. I don't like to show my emotions either. She's shivering.
I know. She's never right without her mom.
It's okay.
I'm not saying anything. We're stuck here. Is Jess okay?
She's not talking.
Well, we're in a small town, Jess. Nothing will happen to us here.
Julian and Alma look anxious. A waitress serves frantically in a crowded diner. Alma's in a long line of women queuing for the toilet. Julian, Jess, and Elliot are at the counter.
No, you know what? They just have the grilled cheese plain with milk, okay? Come on. No, you know what? Why don't you stay here? Stay here, right? You can see me from over there. What? All right, you want to come with me? You can come with me and wait on me. You want to do that?
Bro, I got it. Go get the milk.
Yeah.
Julian leaves Jess with Elliot. Elliot fiddles with the ring on his finger, then slips it off.
You know that everyone gives off energy, right? Scientifically proven. They got these cameras that can record what color you are when you're feeling different things. People that are angry give off a different color than people that are sad. You see this ring? This ring can supposedly tell you what you're feeling. Let's see what you're feeling right now.
Elliot slides the mood ring onto Jess's forefinger.
Ooh, yellow. That's cool. That means you're about to laugh. I'm not making it up. That's what yellow means. You must be about to laugh or something. It's probably just about to come out. But wait. I've got all day.
She smirks.
Oh, my God, there it is. Cool. That ring really works. That's amazing.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, look at this. My sister sent it to me. It was taken an hour ago at the Philadelphia Zoo.
A dumpy red-haired woman sat beside Elliot shows him a video on her camera phone. A man wanders amid lions in an enclosure. He reaches out for one. A lion lunges at the man as other diners watch phones aghast. Tendons dangle where the lion has torn the man's left arm off. A second lion seizes the man's right forearm and rips it off at the elbow. The woman beside Elliot watches disgusted.
Mother of God, what kind of terrorists are these?
Julian watches the video over a man's shoulder. He turns away distraught. A burly man in an apron speaks to the throng in the diner. He lifts a TV onto the counter showing the news.
They're not sure it's terrorists now.
Was a terrorist attack. Authorities are now feeling by the sheer number of incidents being reported that a terrorist group being responsible is becoming less and less likely.
The event appears to be limited to the Northeast, where smaller and smaller towns are being attacked.
Where are we?
The man behind the counter points at the on-screen map.
The dead center.
Everything okay?
Elliot watches Julian fiddle with his mobile. The TV and lights cut out. A man stands in the crowd.
If we stay here, we are gonna die here.
Whatever this is, it looks like it's not occurring about 90 miles from here. Let's go.
The crowd rushes out the door to cars parked outside. Elliot runs alongside a car as it screeches out of the car park, following others down the road. He dashes after other cars heading off the other way.
Hey!
The burly man heads out of the diner to his car. Elliot runs over.
Excuse me, sir. Sir, can we get a ride, please? We don't have any transportation. We're stuck here. Sir, did you hear what I said? We don't have any transportation. We have a little girl with us, please. Sir, you're not just gonna...
Alma wanders over to join Elliot as he watches the burly man speed away.
Can you believe how crappy people are?
A bearded man in a wood-paneled station wagon draws up alongside them.
There's a car.
Hi. I run a plant nursery up the street. We're picking up a few things from home, then heading wherever this isn't happening. We have room.
We have two others.
That's okay.
Julian!
Is Julian okay?
Julian runs over to them with Jess from a red Jeep stopped at the far end of the car park. He looks harrowed. Elliot.
We got a ride. He can fit all of us.
Elliot, I can't get a vet on the phone or email or nothing.
How long?
It's been about 2 hours. She was on that bus headed to Princeton. There's a car over there headed to pick up friends and family, and they said they could squeeze one more.
Gotta go. Look, think real carefully about this.
She was looking for a birthday present for Jess. Some kind of dollhouse. That's why she wasn't with us. Look, I'm just gonna go get her, and I'm gonna bring her back, and I'm gonna find you guys. I need you to take Jess, okay? She's gonna be a lot safer with you. Don't do this to me. I'm doing my best here not to fall down.
I'm sure the probability of Princeton not being hit is good.
Yeah. Hey, you want me to throw some figures and percentages at you so we both feel better?
Please.
All right. 62% chance. 62% chance he hasn't even been hit.
Oh, you go get her, Jules, okay?
Of course, man, of course. Come on, this is all some weird event. That's all. We're all gonna be fine. I'm gonna find you guys real soon.
Julian glances back at the Jeep.
I have to go.
I got her, Julian.
Don't take my daughter's hand unless you mean it.
Alma backs away with a frown and trembling lip as Julian glowers at her. Julian crouches by Jess.
I'm gonna go get Mommy. Hold our picture.
Jess takes the photo from Julian, who takes her in his arms and kisses her head. Alma holds out her hand and Jess grasps it as they watch Julian dash off towards the Jeep, which rolls impatiently out of the car park. Julian grabs the bag he left nearby and leaps into the 4x4, turning to look back at Jess, Alma, and Elliot as the Jeep speeds off down the highway. The station wagon cruises down a country road and turns off onto the driveway of a large house. Elliot, Alma and Jess jump out with the driver and passenger. There's an industrial-sized greenhouse by the house, while two large chimneys belch out smoke from a plant in the distance.
Hey, take a look around. We'll be ready in a jiffy.
The bearded man and his female passenger dash into the house. Jess and Alma follow Elliot into the huge glass house. They gaze at the rows and rows of plants on tables. The tall bearded guy enters behind them.
We're packing hot dogs for the road. You know, hot dogs get a bad rap. They got a cool shape, they got protein. You like hot dogs, right?
Jess fondles the plants. To Elliot.
By the way, I think I know what's causing this.
You do?
It's the plants. They can release chemicals.
Jess looks wary. He turns to Alma.
You like hot dogs, don't you?
She smiles and shakes her head. The bearded guy wanders off amid the plants.
Okay, babies. We are gonna be going, but we will be back soon. Okay?
Plants react to human stimulus. They proved it in tests.
Alma glances wide-eyed at Elliot and points at her temple as the guy's wife runs in.
Get the mustard?
The blonde, hippie-ish middle-aged woman smiles and nods cheerily as she holds up a cool bag. Julian removes his glasses and pinches the bridge of his nose as the Jeep cruises deserted tree-lined boulevards. A handsome, fresh-faced young man sits in the back behind him, with two young brunette women sitting beside him. They pass a sign for Princeton. Julian leans forward in the passenger seat and slips his glasses back on as they pass an abandoned landscaper's truck and a series of mowers at the roadside. Ladders are propped up into the trees. The bodies of landscapers dangle from the branches. Julian turns to the dumpy girl in the back.
Don't look outside. Stop it. Stop it. Just look at me. Just keep looking at me.
The young woman brings her hands to her head.
Close the vents.
Julian shuts the dashboard grills. He turns back to the young woman.
I'm going to give you a math riddle, okay? And you're going to tell me the answer. How much would you have if I said I would pay you a penny on the first day, and then 2 pennies on the second, and then 4 pennies on the third day, and I just kept doubling it? I did this for a month. How much money would you have at the end of the month?
$10.
Oh, hi. Just keep looking at me. Just keep looking at me.
$20.
No, keep going.
Julian's eyes rove around the soft top canvas roof of the Jeep. The guy in the back has stuffed his jacket into the joining seam.
It's $30.
Julian's brow furrows as his eyes come to rest on sunlight shining through a small gash in the rooftop.
I'm going to tell you the answer. It's over $10 million. You'd have over $10 million at the end of the month. You want to hear another one?
Julian stares at the gash in the roof as the Jeep slows to a stop. It suddenly speeds off, making straight for a tree. Two bodies were flung through the windscreen and tumble across a lawn as the front of the Jeep buckles around the trunk of the oak. After a moment, the passenger door opens and Julian steps out, wandering into the road. He sits down slowly in the middle of the wide suburban street and hangs his head in a daze. Seeing shards of glass shattered around him, he picks one up and slashes his wrist. Elliot, Alma, Jess, the bearded man, and his wife listen to the radio in the station wagon as they drive down country lanes.
We have to go through this little community of homes, a small town called Holcomb. Then we hit the highway from there. We're 30 miles from the state line.
Elliot reads the map. The nursery owner's wife gazes ahead.
Are those dead animals up ahead?
They slow as they round a bend.
Stop the car.
Figures lie in the road ahead. Alma turns to Elliot in the back.
You don't think it's...
I don't know.
You got binoculars in the back from when you were spying on our neighbors.
Elliot stands with the binoculars raised to his face, scanning the figures slumped on the tarmac ahead. He lowers the field glasses with a frown as he sees the bloodied corpses.
Can I have the map?
Elliot.
Don't cause a panic, okay? Jess can hear you.
Could not be bought.
Please, give me the map.
Alma hands him the map out of the window. Elliot and the bearded guy get back in the car.
Oh, we have to turn around. That's a right turn about a quarter of a mile back.
We're just gonna take a different route, honey, okay?
Dust billows from the back wheels as the station wagon reverses onto a grass verge, then speeds off down the lane, rustling foliage in its wake. A Hummer approaches as they round a bend.
Oh, it's the army. We're safe.
A young soldier leaps out of the Hummer in camo fatigues and dashes over.
My name is Private Oster. I'm stationed at West Dover Military Base, about 10 miles back. I think they've been affected by whatever's happening. I lost communication with them. When I approached the base, I saw military personnel in the barbed wire, in the fence. So I suggest no one take that road.
There's a town about 8 miles behind us. There were bodies on the road into town.
Cheese and crackers. Well, that still leaves us two directions.
Oster runs towards an oncoming pickup truck.
Just stop! Stop the vehicle!
Two more cars approach the crossroads at speed. The nursery keeper's wife gets out.
I'll talk to them.
Hello? Please stop! Excuse me.
Elliot and Alma try their mobiles. Elliot sees the missed call on Alma's screen.
Who's Joey?
Oh, it's no one.
Elliot drops his phone away from his ear.
Any luck?
I can't get Julian on his cell phone.
I'm sure he'll be all right. They'll be okay.
Elliot glances at the bearded nursery owner, then leans towards Alma.
Maybe he's onto something.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. Why did it start in Parks?
It's the same story. About 8-9 miles back, they say there's a bus in a lake.
5 miles back, there were dozens of bodies.
The nursery owner's wife looks forlornly in at the window. Oster steps back, composing himself.
Okay. Nobody's going anywhere. We're gonna stay right here for a while.
A small crowd from the cars has gathered around a woman on her mobile. The nursery owner jogs from them over to join Elliot, Alma, and Jess standing down the road.
This woman talking to her daughter. She's talking to a daughter in Princeton. Isn't that where your friend went? Come on.
They hurry over to join the crowd around the red-haired woman in her 50s.
It's okay. Honey, it's okay. She's so scared. You just stay in that room. You don't open the door for nothing. Just keep watching out the window with the tree, baby. Someone will come and get you soon.
Tell her not to go near the window with the tree. Just tell her.
Baby, don't go near the window with the tree.
Ask her if Princeton's been affected.
Honey, someone wants to know if Princeton's had any problems. She says everyone's dead outside. You just stay in your room. Honey, you're talking funny. What's wrong with you?
What do you mean? Everyone's dead?
What? Stacy, you're scaring me. I don't understand what you're saying. What, baby? She's just not making any sense.
Calculus. I see. In calculus. Calculus.
Stacy!
Calculus.
Stacy! Stacy!
Oh, my God.
I went from outside.
Oh, no. No, Stacy. Oh, no.
Alma leads Jess out of the crowd as onlookers comfort the distraught woman. Jess stares down the road as Alma crouches beside her.
We're gonna go back to the car, okay, Jess?
Jess lets go of Alma's hand as Alma walks off towards the station wagon. Jess stares down the road at Elliot, who sits at the roadside amid tall grass on the verge, elbows resting on his drawn-up knees, head bowed forward, hands clasped together as if in prayer. The little girl walks slowly towards him, her shadow cast long in the afternoon sun. Alma watches from down the road as Jess steps in front of Elliot. Elliot nods as Jess leans in and whispers in his ear. He pulls her close and she sobs. Watching down the road, Alma's lips draw tight as tears well in her blue eyes. Alma opens the back door of the station wagon and peers in at Jess, now curled up asleep on the back seat. She shuts the door again quietly. The nursery owner's eating a hot dog.
Elliot's resilient, isn't he?
They watch Elliot talking with Oster.
Yeah, he never gives up.
You know, plants have the ability to target specific threats. Tobacco plants, when attacked by Heliothus caterpillars, will send out a chemical attracting wasps to kill just those caterpillars. We don't know how plants attain these abilities. They just evolve very rapidly.
Which species do you think is doing it, if you think it's true?
Plants have the ability to communicate with other species of plants. Trees can communicate with bushes, bushes with grass, and everything in between.
Oster and Elliot look at a map.
The radio says these attacks started happening in the cities, then went to the towns, and now the roads.
That's right. Whatever's happening is happening to smaller and smaller populations.
We shouldn't be on the roads, then. The terrorists or whatever could be watching the roads.
They nod, glancing around.
I don't have any reason to disagree right now.
Oster addresses the assembled crowd.
We're in the area of attack. If you can't find a way through the area of attack, we are told to find a safe zone within the area being attacked.
They're attacking populations. We need to go where there aren't that many people, where people don't travel.
Now, this is Mr. Collins. He's a realtor that works in this area.
If we go west, we'll hit a county called Arendelle. It's not on that map. We don't want to be on local maps. Dirt roads, hardly anybody lives out there.
There's no significant population there. That's our safe zone. We waited out there till it's over.
Is everyone in agreement? We should go into two groups. Those that are ready to go right now, and those that need to get things from their cars. We need to stay in groups. Stay together.
Jess tugs Alma's hand.
We'll go soon, honey. We'll go soon.
Elliot, Alma, and Jess walk across a field with a dozen others.
Maybe we should have waited for the rest of them, stay in the big group like the private said. Your phone's out too? What's wrong?
Okay, I was gonna tell you, okay? There was this guy, Joey. His name is Joey, he's at work. We went out and we had dessert. I went out and I had dessert with him when I told you I worked late and I didn't work late. And I'm feeling really guilty in case we're gonna die. I just wanted you to know that.
You lied to me?
Elliot storms off ahead. Oster walks with the nursery owner and his wife amid the 30-strong group making their way across a field over a hill. Bushes and long grass undulate in the breeze. Oster stops as a young man becomes agitated.
Private Oster!
Oster looks round at the nursery owner.
My firearm is my friend!
He stumbles as he turns and begins to walk backwards. The bearded nursery owner glances at his wife beside him as they watch Oster stop and unclip the holster holding the pistol at his waist. The breeze wafts through the long grass. The nursery owner takes his wife's hand as he watches Oster draw out the semi-automatic. Elliot's group stop and turn.
Jesus. Oh no.
I don't know.
The toxin? The toxin is affecting them? You were with a private. What do we do?
We need to do something!
Oh, just let me think.
They're dying!
I need a second. They released it? We're not near the road.
We can't just stand here as uninvolved observers!
I need a second, okay? Just give me a second!
We're not gonna be one of those assholes on the news who watches a crime happen and not do something. We're not assholes!
Just a second!
There were children in that
room! Elliot, please tell us what to do!
I need a second, okay? Why can't anybody give me a goddamn second? I'd be scientific, douchebag. Identify the variables. That's the two groups. Design an experiment.
That's what we can. Careful observation measurement. That's what I'm trying to do. Interpret the experimental data. Interpret.
Alma and the others turn back towards the shots.
What if it is the plants? Their group was larger than ours. This thing has been escalating all day. Smaller and smaller populations have been setting this off. They react to human stimulus. Maybe people are setting off the plants?
What are you saying? That guy was crazy. We have to save them.
They're already dead. What if they're targeting us as threats? I mean, this part of the field may not have been set off. Something in this field could be releasing the chemical into the air when there's too many of us together. Let's just stay ahead of the wind.
The group exchange wary glances, then turn in unison towards the brow of the hill. Elliot's eyes widen as the group watch the branches of a tree on the brow of the hill begin to sway in the breeze.
Let's just break up into groups.
Two teenage lads turn and run alongside Elliot, Alma, and Jess, while the others dash off in two further groups. The wind rushes after them through the grass. A man and woman rush off with their daughters, while the realtor and three other women run the other way. An overweight woman begins to lag behind. Elliot glances back.
Here it comes!
Jess runs alongside Alma.
Don't you let go of my hand!
Jess's face crumples with fear as the wind begins to whip through her long dark hair. Elliot, Alma, Jess, and the two boys stop and crouch as the gust sweeps over them, lashing the long grass around their feet. Wraps her arms around Jess, pulling her close to her waist. Leading the group, Elliot scrunches his eyes shut, bracing himself. He raises his head slowly as the wind begins to die down. Elliot opens his eyes incredulously and turns to Alma, who looks at him awestruck. Her eyes rove around fearfully as she glances at Jess, then at the boys with them, and finally back at Elliot.
Nothing happened. It was the size of the groups. Could this really be happening?
Elliot calls over to the boys as they run together.
What are your names?
Jared.
Josh!
Wait.
They slow to a stop as they see an abandoned pickup truck parked in the field ahead, the passenger door wide open. Jared is a tubby lad of about 15 with short afro hair. Josh, too, is dumpy and of a similar age, but with red hair.
I'm gonna go see if that truck has a map. You guys wait here.
Still carrying his brown bag, Elliot runs towards the pickup. He peers cautiously into the upholstered interior of the modern 4x4 vehicle, then begins to root through the glove box and seat pockets. Seeing the stereo, he turns it on and pushes the radio presets.
Why aren't they looking into nuclear power plants? There are 15 or more in the Northeast alone, more than anywhere else in the United States. There's probably been some leak or something. It's probably poisoning the air.
Elliot turns the radio off and glances out through the truck's back window. He sees a gabled roof beyond the trees in the distance.
There's a house over there, come on!
Alma and the kids hurry over to join him. Now in the plush house,
it could have been some terrorist booby trap. Someone stepped on it out in the field.
Yeah, in a field in Bumbletown, Pennsylvania.
I don't know.
Look, a toxin dissipates quickly in the air. They're only potent in a certain density. The source had to be close to that field, if not in the field. Here's one. Plants have a chemistry to do this. They release co-transporters into the air.
You think it could be plants?
I don't know. But if it is, and people are setting it off in groups, we need to go to the least populated place. We can't be safe. We can't walk to the borders where this isn't happening, Alma. It's too far.
Whatever it is, terrorists, a nuclear leak, plants, it's probably safe to get away from people right now.
That must be Arendelle. It's 10 miles from here.
Okay, this place must have a bathroom. I'm gonna take Jess and we can leave.
Hurry.
Alma leads Jess out of the oak-paneled study. Alone, Elliot's eyes come to rest on a tall pot plant in the corner of the room. He glances in the direction Alma went as he warily stalks towards it.
Hello?
My name is Elliot Moore. I'm just going to talk in a very positive manner, giving off good vibes. We're just here to use the bathroom. And then we're just going to leave. I hope that's okay.
His eyes, wide with apprehension, rove across the leaves. He frowns and takes a leaf between his fingers.
Plastic. I'm talking to a plastic plant. I'm still doing it.
Elliot finds Jared at the kitchen counter.
You guys ready to leave?
These people must have left in a hurry. I mean, leaving the front door unlocked? Hey, everything's fake.
Jared smirks as he picks up a glass of orange juice and tips it upside down. The juice is solid. Elliot knocks a replica TV. Wrapped gifts are piled in the hallway. Josh is sat at a dinner table laid with fake sushi as Elliot wanders in.
Why is this happening?
I don't know for sure, Josh. But I read this article about the coast of Australia. It said they found large quantities of a primordial bacteria. It hadn't been around for billions of years. It just appeared in the water. It's toxic to humans. Fishermen who come in contact with it are dying. It feels kind of similar to that. With the bees disappearing, I mean, I don't know. It feels like a pattern. The nature of events like the one in Australia is that they crest and then stop. We just have to be alive when it's over.
I don't believe it's nature.
It may not be. It could be some other explanation. I don't know.
Alma walks in with Jess.
Let's go.
There are people coming.
You can't stay here. It's close to the roads. More and more people will come here.
They rush out of the front door of the large faux Georgian house past a flag saying welcome and a sign reading model home. As Elliot, Alma, and the kids rush up the hill, they turn to see people flock towards the house below them.
There's two groups coming together. There's too many of them together. Run.
Alma leads the kids off up the hill as Elliot watches the people slow to a standstill on the lawn below. A middle-aged man walks calmly to a ride-on mower sat at the edge of the grounds and starts it. Elliot looks on in horror as the man lies down on his back in the path of the runaway mower. Red gore sprays from the mower's rotor blades as it rides up over the static man. With one last look back, Elliot hurries off after Alma and the kids. They run past a hoarding advertising the deluxe homes with the caption, "You deserve this." Elliot walks with the lads behind Alma and Jess.
Is she your kid?
No.
You got kids?
No.
How come? You got a problem?
No. She wanted to wait.
Really? For what?
Me to grow up. Why are we talking about this?
Josh sees Elliot toying with the mood ring.
Oh, sweet. I used to love those. Can I see it?
Elliot hands Josh the ring.
You need to take personal responsibility for yourself in a relationship. That'll make a difference.
Okay, thank you. Hey, that's not a toy. It's got meaning to me.
Josh hands the ring back.
Elliot! Look!
Come on.
A transistor radio tied to a fence.
Oh, wow.
An emergency broadcast. All those inside the affected area of the Northeast are asked to proceed to the police borders west of your state. This is an emergency broadcast. Inside the affected area.
Branches rustle in the treetops above their heads. Now standing on a lawn.
Jess needs a 10-minute rest and some food.
They stand stock still, staring towards a house across the lawn. Elliot looks at Alma.
Are you sure? We should keep going.
I know, but she's only 8.
She looks at him, eyeing her.
What?
If we're gonna die, I want you to know something. I was in a pharmacy a while ago. It was a really good-looking pharmacist behind the counter. Really good-looking. I went up and I asked where the cough syrup was. I didn't even have a cough. And I almost bought it. And I'm talking about a completely superfluous bottle of cough syrup. That's like $6.
Are you joking?
Tears well in her eyes as he looks at her with an earnest frown and nods. Her lip trembles.
Thank you.
Standing on the porch of the large house, Elliot knocks the door. He tries the handle. Glancing around, he peers through the closed slatted shutters covering the windows. Josh joins him. Elliot turns to see Alma pushing Jess on a swing suspended from a tree.
Maybe that's not a good idea?
I told her just for a minute.
Elliot gazes up at the towering tree. Josh.
Mr. Moore, I think I can open this door.
Wait, we're a gang now? We're gonna take whatever we want? Come on, guys.
So nobody's home. We're just gonna get some food for Jess.
But yeah, and it looks like nobody's lived here for a long time anyway. I mean, it's all boarded up.
Maybe we could leave some money.
The swing is bolted to a branch high above.
What kind of tree is this?
I think it's a maple.
Not so high.
Okay, Josh. Open the door.
Wait. I see something. There's somebody in there.
You sure?
Yeah, I saw him move.
I see him.
Let's stop.
Is there any way we could get some food? We have a little girl. We just want to get her some food.
You best leave now. You ain't gonna bring that poison gas in here with you.
Sir, it's not poison gas. There's none out here.
They said to stay inside.
We're fine right now. Nothing's happened out here yet. I mean, you could see that. Just listen to our voices. We're perfectly normal. Oh, Blackwater, keep on rolling. Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me? See? We're normal.
Jess stares at the swing, still swaying.
You ain't from around here. You best leave now.
Okay. It's not worth it.
Open the door, bitch!
Hey, Josh, don't do that. He didn't mean that.
There's more than one in there.
Jess! Jess, come here.
Stop it, Jess.
Listen, we just want some food for a little girl, you pussies!
Jess, come here.
Josh, stop it.
Let's not let that gas in here.
Sir, the air is fine out here right now. You don't need to worry.
Might be with the terrorists.
I don't think it's terrorists, sir. Josh, stop it!
You're being crazy, Mr. Moore.
Show your faces!
Let the gas in.
No!
Elliot recoils in horror as Josh is blasted through with shot from the barrel of the gun poked out through the front door. The gun pokes through the shutters at Jared.
Jared!
Elliot leaps down off the porch to Jared once the barrel of the gun draws back through the shutters. He kneels by the lad, who lies quivering in the grass, a bloody wound at the back of his head.
I'm gonna get out of this nightmare.
Alma rushes to Josh's body. Jess quakes with her hands over her ears as Alma goes to Elliot.
Elliot!
Alma raises Elliot's face in her hands.
We have to go. We have to protect Jess.
Both of their faces crumple with grief as they crouch over Jared's body.
You got the three to get off our porch!
They glance over at Jess. She's gone. They catch up with her running across a field. Two old ladies watch the news in gas masks while others across the country prepare.
No new people have crossed over the border for a few hours. It appears those residents that are still in the affected area of the Northeast are trying to wait it out. We have Professor Kendall Wallace of Carnegie Mellon, a statistician, here with us. Professor, what can you tell us?
Calculating by the rise in intensity of reports of incidents within the affected area, one can guess at a crude timetable. One can see the incident is rising in sensitivity. It would seem fewer and fewer people can provoke the attacks. The event should be at its most sensitive tomorrow morning. Typically, these type of slopes drop precipitously after cresting, meaning it could end suddenly at any moment. Of course, these are only probabilities.
There are some quiet rumblings that the government may be involved in the tragic events playing out in the Northeast. Now, these rumors have been fueled by the statements of a confidential informant who claims that the CIA has facilities in the Northeast where they are testing drugs with some similar psychotropic properties as a defense against chemical weapons. CIA and White House officials have declined to respond to these accusations. Perimeters have been set up all along the East Coast. from Maryland all the way to Massachusetts.
A map on the news shows red and yellow dots around Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and Washington. Elliot, Alma, and Jess approach a rundown stone house.
This house has no power going to it.
Nobody's driven on this driveway for a long time either. Let me go. You guys stay right here.
Alma watches with trepidation as Elliot walks warily towards the house and up to the rickety screen door on the wooden veranda. He takes in the plaster crumbling off the decrepit walls, then turns and walks along the front of the house to a rusty bell, pulling on its cord gingerly.
That's for Clement.
A silver-haired woman sits in a rocking chair watching him.
He's a retriever. You lost? You must be. There ain't nothing around here for miles.
Elliot stands staring at her.
Why are you eyeing my lemon drink?
She slams her drink down and leans back in her rocking chair.
I suppose the kind thing for me to do is to offer you supper.
Elliot watches with a furrowed brow as the elderly woman stands and stomps past him through the screen door into the house.
I ain't gonna ask you again.
Night. Elliot, Alma, and Jess have dinner with the woman at a wide table in a gloomy kitchen lit with oil lamps. Elliot eyes a faded framed photo of a young woman with a soldier in uniform.
I hope the meal was sufficient. I wasn't expecting guests.
Alma smiles nervously and glances at Elliot. She looks around the room.
This is a beautiful place.
There's a spring house in the back. They used to hide people from slave chasers back there. It has a speaking tube running under the ground to the main house. You can hear each other like you're in the same room. So, what's with you two? Who's chasing who?
I'm sorry?
Ain't no time. Two people staring at each other, standing still, loving both their eyes at the same time, equal. Truth is, someone is chasing someone. That's the way we's built. So, who's chasing?
Elliot raises his hand.
I knew that.
The woman, Mrs. Jones, slaps Jess's hand as she reaches for a biscuit.
Don't touch things that aren't yours.
Alma shoots a look at Elliot as Mrs. Jones sips her tea.
Do you have a radio, Mrs. Jones?
No. I got enough to fill my time right here. I mend my own things. I grow my own food. Although I ain't got the touch. Gardens don't grow the way they should. Never have.
How do you stay in contact with others?
I don't.
How would you know if something were to happen? Like a world event?
Mrs. Jones, something's happened along the East Coast.
Whatever it is that you think is so important that you need to tell me, don't. Just keep it to yourself. The world don't care about me. I don't care about it.
She darts a sidelong glance at them cagily.
Suppose I have to let you spend the night. Guest room's up on the left. Mind the steps.
Mrs. Jones slams her napkin down on the table and storms out. Wind rustles the leaves of the trees around the house. In their large and dingy bedroom, Alma crouches beside the bed where Jess lies asleep, while Elliot stares out of the window. Alma creeps to his side.
I'm scared, Elliot.
It's okay.
I'm sorry about everything, that Joey thing. I was being stupid.
You've been great taking care of Jess.
need to stay in this house. You want me to protect you. This is how we have to do it. Let's just deal with her.
They both turn towards the door leading out to the landing. Elliot lets go of Alma's hands and stalks towards the open door. Mrs. Jones stands down the hall in a white nightgown.
I hear you whispering. Planning on stealing something?
No, ma'am, we're not.
Plan on murdering me in my sleep?
What? No!
She turns and walks off to her room. Elliot wakes alone on the bed as morning sunlight streams in through the windows. Elliot gets up off the bed and peers out of the window. He zips up his pullover as he comes downstairs. Glancing around furtively, he wanders into the deserted kitchen, around the table, then out into the hall again. Elliot sees a door ajar leading to a room off the gloomy hallway. His shadow glides across the grubby walls as he creeps towards the room and knocks on the door. Pushing the door open and peering inside, Elliot sees a large antique wooden doll laid on a bed.
Mrs. Jones?
He creeps inside towards the doll. Biblical pictures adorn the walls.
Mrs. Jones?
With a furrowed brow, Elliot stands over the doll lying on its back on the patchwork quilt. It's the size of a small child, with auburn hair and dressed in Edwardian lace. Its eyes stare out from the cracked, varnished skin of its pale face.
Crazy lady.
You tried to steal my things!
No. No, Mrs. Jones, I actually wanted to talk with you.
You all are gonna leave right now!
Ma'am, you don't understand. There's something happening in a few states. In this region, it's not safe!
Leave now!
She grits her teeth, shakes her fist at him, and marches out. Elliot wanders out into the hall after her. He stands at the front door and watches as she shuffles around the garden.
Mrs. Jones, could we talk calmly for a second? Just hear me out. See, I'm a teacher.
Elliot's face falls as he watches the old woman stop and start to walk backwards as the wind rustles leaves around her.
Mrs. Jones?
She turns and stares at him, unwavering.
Oh my God.
Elliot rushes inside as the wind sweeps across the garden.
Alma, shut the windows and the doors!
He backs away from the front door and calls up the stairs.
Alma!
He looks around desperately as he walks through the house. Mrs. Jones passes the window outside on the veranda. Elliot follows along the living room walls with his eyes as she walks outside. Mrs. Jones appears at the window with a vacant stare and a smashed, bloodied nose. She smashes her head through the glass, a shard piercing her eye. Elliot backs out of the room terror-stricken as Mrs. Jones walks to another sash window and thrusts her head through the pane. The curtains billow as the wind blows in. Elliot slams the door and stuffs rags from a rail nearby around the doorframe. He stands by the door, eyeing it apprehensively.
Alma? Jess?
Brows knit together in confusion, Elliot turns slowly away from the living room door and walks through the kitchen towards a grimy doorway at the rear. He pushes it open and enters a stark brick storeroom. Stands by the talk tube and gazes out the window at a stone shack nearby. Alma and Jess are inside.
Wait, get him again. Get him again.
Hey, Tommy.
Alma!
Good morning, Elliot. Sounds like you're right here.
Close the windows and the doors, Alma.
Why?
Mrs. Jones just died. Close the windows.
Alma swings the window shut.
Close the door, Jess.
Wind swishes through the grass outside as Jess shuts the door. Alma puts her arm around Jess as they back away from the door and kneel huddled together. The grass rustles as Elliot watches from the window.
Is everything closed?
Yes.
He sits on the floor, hunched against the walls in the corner where the pipe juts from the wall.
Sorry, Alma.
What's going on, Elliot?
It's happening here. It could be the grass and the trees are doing this now. She was alone when it happened. It seems like they might have gotten more sensitive.
It's too dangerous to go outside, isn't it?
Yes.
This is the end, isn't it? I wish you were here.
Wincing with grief, Elliot glances down at the mood ring on his finger. The gem on top has turned amber. Outside, the wind lashes the tops of the trees.
You remember our first date? It was so quiet.
You bought me the mood ring.
It turned purple when you wore it.
Then you said, "That means you're in love."
Got you to talk, didn't it?
In the stone hut, Alma kisses the top of Jess's head and moves away from her to sit with a smile by her end of the pipe.
Then we checked the little paper chart and it turned out that purple meant I was horny. You love that.
I had no idea.
Yours was blue, peaceful, right?
Right.
What color was love?
I don't remember.
Me neither.
In their separate rooms at either end of the pipe, Alma and Elliot share a harrowed look.
Elliot?
Yeah?
I was just making sure you're there.
Elliot's face buckles with grief as he hangs his head.
It's not right for it to end like this. If we're gonna die, I wanna be with you. I wanna be with you, and I'm gonna come be with you.
Alma frowns fearfully as she listens at the pipe.
Elliot, don't!
She stands and gazes out of the window, dewy-eyed and open-mouthed, as she watches Elliot walk out of the door and onto the veranda of the house opposite. Walking slowly as if in a daze, Elliot edges forward off the veranda and walks towards Alma's hut. The branches of the surrounding trees sway as he stops in the shadow of a large oak. He closes his eyes and takes a deep breath. Elliot opens his eyes again to see Alma open the door of the stone shack and lead Jess out by the hand. The long grass sways around them as Alma and Jess walk towards Elliot, the wind whipping their long, dark hair. Jess gazes up at Alma as they walk steadily forward. Alma looks down at her serenely. They look towards Elliot as he comes towards them, composed and steady, moving out from beneath the trees. They stop, facing each other, a few feet apart amid the swaying grass. After a moment, Elliot steps towards Alma and holds out his hand. She slips her delicate fingers onto his palm, and he clasps her hand in his. Above, the wind blows the branches of the trees back and forth wildly. Alma and Elliot stare into each other's eyes apprehensively, then turn to gaze around them. A caption, Arundel County, 9:58 a.m. Elliot, Alma and Jess walk back into the kitchen. The screen door shuts behind them and they stand in the kitchen looking around in a bewildered daze. Alma follows as Jess wanders off. Now in the back room at Elliot's end of the pipe, the three of them sit on the floor with their backs to the wall. Elliot and Alma rest their hands on Jess, who sits between them.
The event must have ended before we went out there.
The screen goes dark. A caption over a leafy boulevard of brownstone houses in the shadow of a skyscraper. 3 months later.
I found the hair clip!
Alma runs along a stylish hall to Jess's bedroom.
You don't want to be late for the first day schools are open.
Jess clips back her hair.
Oh, wait.
The photo of Julian and Yvette.
I'm just going to put this right here.
In Jess's backpack.
Okay.
Alma smiles as Jess turns around to face her.
Are you okay?
Yes, Aunt Alma. I love you.
I love you too.
Alma embraces Jess tightly and closes her eyes. Jess now stands on a street corner holding Elliot's hand. He puts her bag on her back as a yellow school bus draws up.
All right, pick up after you're done with school, okay?
He leads her by the hand to the bus door and ushers her aboard. She leans out of the window and touches his hand as the bus drives away. Grey-haired, bespectacled Dr. Ross talks animatedly to a suave, dark-haired anchorman on TV.
As everyone knows by now, traces of the neurotoxin have been found in some plants and trees. Now, most environmentalists feel that this event is like the red tide in the ocean. But instead of algae-killing fish, this happened on land. Now, plants and trees just can't pick up and move when they feel threatened like other species. They have only one option, to rapidly evolve their chemistry.
Kay from Mississippi wants to know why it started so suddenly on a Tuesday at 8:33 and then ended so suddenly at 9:27 the next morning.
Well, Kay, to be perfectly honest, this was an act of nature, and we'll never fully understand it.
And, Doctor, there's been a lot of speculation as to why this happened in the Northeast only. How do you explain that?
Well, I believe, all right, and this is just my opinion, that this was a prelude, a warning, like the first spot of a rash. We have become a threat to this planet. I don't think anybody will argue that. And this is a warning.
A warning? See, I think the skeptics would believe that if it had occurred anywhere else. That's why most people believe it was the government. If it had happened in one other place, anywhere else, we could all believe what you're saying.
Alma sits perched on the edge of a bathtub. A result indicator stick from a pregnancy test kit sits to her left on the edge of the bathroom basin. She glances at it, then averts her eyes hurriedly. She fidgets with towels on a rail to her right and adjusts a pot on a shelf, glancing distractedly at the tester. She glances at her watch, then jumps up. Two vertical lines indicate a positive result on the test stick. Her eyes wander as she smirks. An awestruck smile spreads across her face as her eyes light up. Outside, Elliot strolls down the tree-lined street. He sees Alma standing at the foot of the steps to their door, beaming and swaying her hands by her hips. Elliot stops on the pavement and looks at her impassively for a moment, before walking calmly to meet her. She takes his hands in hers as they meet on the sidewalk. A gentle breeze wafts through the trees around them. He lifts her hands up towards his chest before pulling her towards him. The screen fades to black. Pigeons flutter amid people strolling down wide chalk paths of a manicured park. Marble classical statues atop plinths and topiaried hedges surround elegant people at the tables of an outdoor cafe. Two young men stroll past old fellas playing pool. Subtitles: I should drop my bicycle off at the apartment before I go to work. Can you make Nadia's party tonight? I should drop my bicycle off at the apartment before I go to work. The party guy glances round. That frightened me. His cyclist friend's walk slows. I should drop my bicycle off. What? The cyclist stops and stares vacantly. The party guy looks around mortified. Everybody's frozen. My God. The cyclist mutters about his bicycle as his friend watches dark clouds loom over a chateau and the wind rustle through the clipped lines of trees. A film by M. Night Shyamalan. Elliot Moore, Mark Wahlberg, Alma Moore, Zoe Deschanel, Julian, John Leguizamo, Jess, Ashlyn Sanchez. Mrs. Jones, Betty Buckley, Josh, Spencer Breslin, Jared, Robert Bailey Jr., Nursery Owner, Frank Collison, Private Oster, Jeremy Strong, Principal, Alan Ruck, Nursery Owner's Wife, Victoria Clark. Joey, M. Night Shyamalan. Woman Reading on Bench with Hairpin, Alison Folland. Woman Reading on Bench, Kristen Connolly. Construction Foreman, Cornell Womack. Construction Crew Member, Curtis McLaren. Jake, Robert Lindsay. Train Conductor, Derej Harding. Woman on Cell Phone, Kerry O'Malley. Teenage Girl in Jeep, Shayna Levine. French Bicyclist, Stéphane Debac. French Bicyclist's Friend, Cyril Tuvenin. Medical Correspondent, Babita Hariani. US Reporter, Alicia Taylor. Professor Kendall Wallace, Edward James Highland. Talk Show Host, Armand Schultz. Dr. Ross, Stephen Singer. Student Named Laura, Sophia Burke. Boy in Class, Alex Van Coy. Student Named Dylan, Charlie Saxton. Vice Principal, Kathy Hart. Teacher in Auditorium, Lisa Gunn. Railway Police Officer, Rick Foster. PA System Conductor, Mark H. Glick. Philadelphia Police Officer, Don Castro. Taxi Driver Sal, Bill Chimurka. Older Woman with Dog, Jan Ellis. Passenger, Whitney Sugarman. Woman Passenger, Mary Ellen Driscoll. Passenger at Counter, Greg Wood. Diner Owner, Peter Appel. Passenger 1, Aon O'Shea. Passenger 2, Michael Quinlan. Passenger 3, Lyman Chen. Jeep Driver, Brian C. O'Halloran. Jeep Passenger 1, Megan Mazaika. Jeep Passenger 2, Richard Chu. Man in Crowd at Crossroads, Keith E. Bullard. Realtor, Joel De La Fuente. Woman in Group, Ashley Brimfield. Woman with Hands Over Ears, Mara Hobel. Farmhouse Voice, James Jimbo Breen. Mangled Construction Worker, Carmen Bitonti. Arguing Man in Crowd, Brian Anthony Wilson. Zoo Employee, Greg Smith Aldridge. Local news anchor Yuki Washington, network news anchor John Ottavino, radio news anchor Sid Doherty, radio voice Wes Haywood, radio caller Faye Nancy Sakurka, young woman voice on phone Julia Yorks, radio newsman Bill Schuster, radio announcer Kirk Penberthy. Truck passenger boy Alex Kraft, truck passenger girl Ali Haberstad. Copyright 2008, 20th Century Fox Film Corporation, UTV Communications USA LLC, and Dune Entertainment 3 LLC in all territories except Brazil, Italy, Japan, Korea, and Spain. Copyright 2008, TCF Hungary Film Rights Exploitation Limited Liability Company, 20th Century Fox Film Corporation, UTV Communications USA LLC, and Dune Entertainment 3 LLC in Brazil, Italy, Japan, Korea, and Spain. 20th Century Fox Film Corporation and UTV Communications USA LLC are the authors of this motion picture for the purposes of copyright and other laws. The events, characters and firms depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons living or dead or to actual events or firms is purely coincidental. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws, and any unauthorized duplication, distribution or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. Audio description by Deluxe, written and voiced by Toby Mace.